Shoji, birth and death. This birth and death is the life of Buddha. If you try to exclude it, you will lose the life of Buddha. If you try to cling to it, trying to remain in it, you will also lose the life of Buddha. And what remains will be the mere form of Buddha. Only when you don't dislike birth and death or long for them do you enter Buddha's mind. Just set aside your body and mind, forget about them, and throw them into the house of Buddha. Then all is done by Buddha. When you follow this, you are free from birth and death and become a Buddha without effort or calculation. So only when you don't dislike birth and death or long for them do you enter the Buddha's mind. So these are some teachings that we come across in our Buddhist Dharma. This teaching that there is this remarkable capacity in practice that we can, in some way, transcend birth and death. And that when we do, we are living the life of Buddha. And I don't know about you, but for me, sometimes I feel like a failure at this. Because sometimes I do fear death. It dawns on me that I don't want to be extinguished. That maybe on some level I fear what may happen after death. Maybe I fear that in some way consciousness will go on, but it won't have any content. It will just be some eternal void. And that, of course, makes no sense. And nonetheless, these are the types of things that can arise in the mind, like little dreams of the future. Of course, we also have so many people who we love, to whom we may feel attached. And the notion of leaving one another makes us grieve. And when we lose people we love, we grieve. And we wonder, where did he go? Where did she go? What is death? Perhaps we think of Hamlet, which I recently taught. What dreams may come in this sleep of death? And we have these metaphors that if the person is in some way asleep for eternity, there must still be something. Well, what is it? And these types of images may be frightening to us. And in our practice, these places, these little vulnerabilities. Here I am, a Zen teacher. And one might imagine, as such, that these types of concerns no longer arise. So imagine my embarrassment when here were these concerns arising. And I realized that, of course, I wanted to share them with my own colleagues and teachers. And in doing so, David Reinach reminded me of a few other stories. One of them was the story of Katagiri Roshi, a long, lifelong practitioner who, as death was approaching, a little group of students came and gathered around him and said, "How are you, Roshi?" And he said, "I don't want to die." And I have another story here, Shunryu Suzuki. This one's going to take a little more because, I'll start right into it. So here's what he says. When you live completely in each moment without expecting anything, you have no idea of time. When you are involved in an idea of time, today, tomorrow, or next year, selfish practice begins. Trying to become someone else, you lose your practice and lose your virtue. My practice of Shikantaza or Zazen changed about 2 years ago after I almost drowned. I wanted to cross the creek at Tassajara. I cannot actually swim. But the students were enjoying the water so much, I thought I would join them. This part of the story is funny. There were so many beautiful girls over there. So I tried to go over there, forgetting that I couldn't swim. And I almost drowned. The feeling was pretty bad. I was swallowing water, so I stretched out my arms, hoping that someone would catch me, but no one helped me. I decided to go to the bottom to walk, but that was not possible either. I could not reach the bottom, and I could not get above the surface. What I saw was the legs of beautiful girls, but I could not take hold of their legs, and I was rather scared. At that time, I realized that we never have good practice until we become quite serious. Because I knew that I was not dying, he knew he would be rescued. I was not so serious. And because I was not so serious, I had a very difficult time. If I knew I was dying, I would not have struggled anymore. I would have stayed still because I thought I had another moment. I did not become serious. Since then, my practice has improved. When you are not thinking that you have another moment, then naturally you can accept things as they are. You can see things as they are. You will have perfect wisdom at that time. When you are not thinking that you have another moment, then naturally you can accept things as they are. You can see things as they are. You will have perfect wisdom at that time. He offers some instruction. How is this that we do this, not thinking that we have another moment? He says, for a period of time each day, try to sit in Shikantaza, without moving, without expecting anything, as if you were in your last moment. Moment after moment, you feel your last instant. When you practice this in your last moment, you will have nothing to be afraid of. You become one with everything after you completely exhale with this feeling. So, to have no idea of time. Of course, life and death are concepts that arise in us, as is the entire sense of self. The entire sense of being a separate, independent existence that in some way endures with unity through time. This is fundamentally a concept. It is also a relative truth, as are life and death. They are labels that we ascribe to processes, labels that we ascribe, and they have great power, these labels. The mind is a powerful organ. The way that it frames reality and frames our experience and creates narratives. We might imagine that if we practice well, that we will be free of these narratives, that they will no longer arise. But this would be a problem for us. Our narratives are actually quite helpful, allowing us to adhere to appropriate boundaries, allowing us to discern what is healthy, what is not, allowing us to care for one another. We need these narratives to function. I like thinking of the relative truth, these narratives that we use to function in the world, these basic approximations and idealizations of self and other, as one side of a coin. That should not be tossed away, because if we toss away that side of the coin, we toss away everything. So, not to be dismissed. Indeed, this side of the coin, the relative truth, can be viewed as an invitation for deeper looking. I have a sense of self that arises and a fear that this self will die. Well, this presents an opportunity for me to look more closely. Who dies? What is death? And not to go on speculating in a metaphysical way. That will take us down endless highways and byways of the mind. But to truly look, to look with our eye of practice, to look with our eye of meditation. And in this way, we enter the stream of practice. Who dies? Who is it sitting here? What is this death that I fear? For me, turning toward this arising of this, it wasn't really fear, it was also a kind of sadness, I guess, about death. Without dismissing it, without pretending I was in some way above it, but instead to turn toward this mixed sadness and fear and just allow it to be present, to give it space and to openly ask, okay, what is this? Allowed me to see that the whole construct was a mental formation that was dancing in front of my eyes in that very moment. True or false at that moment becomes irrelevant. We just realize that it's a mental formation, present in the moment. And that realization is so liberating. No need to argue with the content at all. In fact, it doesn't matter. It's just like a dream. Like every sense of self that arises, like a dream. As we practice over the years, we see that sense of self after sense of self arise. That is the nature of the human mind. And this is not a problem. We can just relate with these mental formations as senses of self. Even life and death as just mental formations, as a dream happening in this moment. And somehow it allows us to see. It's funny, when we take these things that exist almost on the periphery of consciousness, you know, in our society, we hide ourselves from death. We put a big shrubbery between ourselves and graveyards, don't we? We tuck them in secret places behind roads so we don't have to see death too much. I think it's rather scary for us. But this possibility of turning toward the shadowy parts of ourselves, the parts that do scare us, and integrating with them. That which we run from controls us. But to allow it in and see that we are not destroyed by it, that we can, in fact, integrate with these fears. To see them as fears rather than as reality. And somehow something that seemed almost too big to reckon with, bigger than our scope of vision, is suddenly held, contained within our awareness fully. Death. This is why we chant the five remembrances. The third of which is, I am of the nature to die. There is no way to escape death. You know, some people come and try out Zen one time or just to see, is this for me? And they come across that chant and they don't come back. And other people hear that and say, oh, thank God, finally a place where people acknowledge. And the reason we acknowledge this is to just stop running from it, to integrate with this relative truth. And by integrating with the relative truth, we are no longer running from it and are no longer controlled by it. We can make peace with the mental formation of death. So Dogen says, this birth and death is the life of Buddha. If you try to exclude it, you will lose the life of Buddha. If you try to cling to it, trying to remain in it, you will also lose the life of Buddha. And what remains will be the mere form of Buddha. Only when you don't dislike birth and death or long for them do you enter Buddha's mind. So, this is not an idealistic notion that we should never have fear or feelings or sadness.
around birth and death. It is to say that when those thoughts and feelings arise, we can turn toward them with love and compassion. We can allow them to be present, and we can see them as concepts, as stories that are here in the present. We can integrate them, and we can breathe, and we can return to this moment when there is no future, no past, just this. And we are free, liberated in this boundless presence that Shunryu Suzuki describes as a kind of oneness. That a Christian might describe as God's presence, available to us in each and every moment.